Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the flu vaccine shortage right after this. You know, marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it's regulated. It's regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services. It's regulated by the Family Court. Well, the best part about all of this is that you have absolutely no input into or say-so over the marriage, the divorce, the dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of it, and if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important, and it's the most expensive contract that you can engage in. It's more binding, and it's more costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And I'll bet you probably know a whole lot less about it than you do your military obligations or your house payments. About two-thirds of all marriages here in the United States end in divorce, but whether you are a husband or wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or to defend against any breach of this marriage contract. And that's why you should know and understand the terms and conditions of your marriage contract before you marry. And you should write that contract instead of letting the state write it for you. Now, whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD package and let me share some vital information with you about the law and that marriage contract. Just call direct 417-273-4967. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Just send an email, and we'll send you that free general law CD package and tell you a little more about marriage and that contract. The marriage contract. The flu vaccine shortage. Have you been watching the news lately? Why, people are panic-stricken, thinking that they're not going to get their flu vaccine for 2004-2005 flu season. Well, you can understand people's apprehension. 30,000 Americans die every year from the flu. Right after, or I guess just at the end of World War II, 1918, 1919, 1920, along in there, we had a great flu epidemic here in the United States. In fact, it was worldwide, and it was estimated that somewhere between 25 and 50 million people died from the flu. Now, that's getting up to the statistics of the bubonic plague back in 1348 that killed about 100 million people in Europe. People are fearful of disease, and rightfully so. Disease is a penalty that we pay for a violation of a law. Now, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty, because if you could have a broken law, if you could have a law without a penalty, you wouldn't have a law, you would have a suggestion. What would you have if your state put a speed limit out there of, oh, say, 60 miles an hour, and everybody drove 80, and the policeman might stop you? What if the policeman didn't even stop you? He just shook his fist at you, or what if he stopped you and said, that's really bad of you driving 80 or 110 through this school zone? And then you give him the finger, flip him off, and he goes his way and you go yours. The thing that keeps you from driving 80 miles an hour through speed zones and school zones and so on, is the fear of losing your license or getting a ticket that's going to cost you a lot of money or something on that order. It's the fear of the penalty that keeps you from violating the law. Now, if you had the same fear as it relates, let's say, to eating pork, or if you had that same fear as it relates, let's say, to paying your income tax or tithing or whatever the subject matter might be, you'd probably be a whole lot more careful about practicing that law so that you didn't have to pay the penalty. But if in your mind there's no penalty, well, then why shouldn't I do it? Sex is that way. We Americans see no connecting link between AIDS, herpes, or venereal disease, sexually transmitted diseases, and the prohibitions against certain acts and activities that we see in the Bible. Furthermore, watch this. You go down to Flo's Whorehouse, you get a dose of clap, you go to the doctor, he sells you forgiveness of sin. Yeah, he sells you sulfa drugs and penicillin down at Mercy Medical Center in the hospital. He's Marcus Welby, MD. And he can forgive your sin through drugs. So, we don't have nearly the same restraint in America today, and I suppose you people in Australia, New Zealand, and the Seychelles Islands, or Guatemala, or wherever you're living, have a whole lot less inhibition against adultery or sexual promiscuity than you had 100 years ago or 200 years ago when you saw some guy with his nose rotted off or some guy who died early, his body racked with gonorrhea, syphilis, or some other sexually transmitted disease. So we today look at somebody who gets the flu, they're taken to the hospital and they die, and we say, oh my God, I got to have my flu shot. And that's the way people are right now, today in the United States. They're blaming the government. They're blaming the government for not having enough flu vaccine. Now, at the last I heard, the government doesn't produce flu vaccine. Well, then why didn't the government create a law, a policy, or do something, appropriate money to protect us from the flu? We Americans see government like God. God should protect us from ourselves, should protect us from disease, should protect us from the debilities that come from disease or from some other imagined or real, for that matter, debility that may come upon me. We have traffic laws. The government should protect us from traffic accidents. It isn't something that I need to do for myself. It isn't that I should buckle my seatbelt to protect myself. It's that the government should pass a law and enforce that law and make everybody buckle their seatbelts, because like little kids, you know, we can't think for ourselves and act for ourselves. So when you get in the car, you say, Johnny, buckle your seatbelt. So you train him to buckle his seatbelt. And that's because if you didn't tell Johnny to buckle his seatbelt, he wouldn't do it for himself. And so you have to guide him. You have to force him to do what's good for him. Now, when the government does that, they come out here and they force you to do something, you say, well, this is tyrannical government. And we hate this. This interferes with my freedom. So on the one hand, you want to be free so that you can choose to live your life the way you want to live it. But then on the other hand, you blame the government if anything goes wrong in the process. Seems like we want to have it both ways, doesn't it? Well, I didn't get my flu vaccine this year. I was left out of the loop. So if you didn't get your flu vaccine, if you missed out on your flu shot this year, well, join the club. There's a lot of us that missed out on our flu shot. So maybe we could take consolation in some information that perhaps you'd never heard before. Listen to this story here. Alzheimer's and flu vaccines. Have you ever thought about Alzheimer's disease? Alzheimer's disease. I know it's an old folks disease. It's something that old people get, and all of us young guys, we don't need to be concerned about that. But someday you'll get old. If you live long enough, you'll get old. And if you get old, you may get Alzheimer's disease, and it doesn't seem to be a very pleasant concept, not to make fun of somebody that's got Alzheimer's disease, but you know, life has cause and effect relationships. You hear me talk about that from time to time. There's choices to be made. You get in the car, you want to buckle your seatbelt or not? You know, it's a choice that you make. You want to drive 55, 65, 75, 95, 110, I mean, you know, there's the accelerator pedal on the floor and your foot's on it. You know, you can drive as fast as you want. Sometimes you restrain yourself for one reason or another. You know, you may see a sign that says slow to 35 and you may actually slow to 60. You know, things like that come up and you have to make these kinds of decisions. Well, what about the decision to get a flu vaccine? What about a decision to vaccinate your children? What about a decision that has to do with your health? Has anybody ever thought about cause and effect relationships? Well, according to Hugh Feudenberg, MD, the world's leading immunologist, he's actually an immunogeneticist. He's an author of nearly 850 papers in peer-reviewed journals. You ever heard of this guy, Feudenberg? I never heard of him either. You've probably heard of George Bush, George Cheney, John Kerry. See, those are names that are in the news. These are important people when you watch TV. You probably haven't heard of Hugh Feudenberg, MD. He's the world's leading immunogeneticist, author of 850 papers in peer-reviewed journals. Have you read any of Mr. Feudenberg's papers? Probably not. If you never heard of this guy, what would make you read one of his papers? And furthermore, how many of us, you know, are diligently running down to the library and looking up medical peer review papers? You ever done that? You ever get up one morning and say, oh my God, I have this overwhelming urge to read a medical journal. I just can't go to work today. I have to read a medical journal. You know, the average guy on the street couldn't find a medical journal in a library with a road map at high noon with both hands. I couldn't. I'd have to have my secretary do something like that. I'm not smart enough. But every once in a while, something comes across my desk and catches my attention, so I just can't conceive of containing it all by myself, so I have to share it with everybody. Well, Mr. Feudenberg, MD, the world's leading immunogeneticist, reports to us that individuals who have had five consecutive flu shots between 1970 and 1980, these are the years that he studied, have 10 times higher incidence of Alzheimer's disease than if they had one shot, two shots, or no shots. Hey, now that caught my attention. My God, you mean that between 1970 and 1980, if you had five consecutive flu shots, your chances of getting Alzheimer's disease are 10 times greater than if you had no shots at all, or just one shot, or two shots of flu vaccine? Now, we're not talking about something heavy duty, you know, like some experimental cancer drug or something. We're just talking about the average routine Joe six-pack flu shot. You get one every year, don't you? Does that mean that flu shots cause the Alzheimer's disease? Well, I don't know. Can you add and subtract? Can you figure that out? I'm going to read it to you one more time. Now pay attention, boys and girls, and listen to this. Start using your heads now. I know it's a strain for a lot of people now, but let's think for ourselves. We're going to think this through. Individuals between 1970 and 1980, can you think back that far? 20, 30 years, 70 to 80. These are the years that were studied. Now, we didn't study 1980 to 1990 or 1990 to 2000, but from 70 to 80, individuals who had five consecutive flu shots. That is, you had a flu shot in 1970, 71, 72, 73, and 74. Five consecutive. Any 5 years consecutive. One, two, three, four, five. Five flu shots. Had a 10 times greater chance of getting Alzheimer's disease than if they had no shots at all, or just one or two shots in that same 5-year period. And I'll just let you add it up and multiply it and divide it and mull that one over a little bit and then ask yourself, gee, would I like to go out and get a flu shot? I mean, I'm not here to tell you not to. It's a choice. It's a decision. You need to make it. So somebody's going to write me an email and say, you crazy lunatic fringe, you're giving me a choice. I either die from the flu or I'm going to die from Alzheimer's disease. Well, you know, if you put it into perspective, you know, we Americans are spending a lot of money to protect ourselves now from terrorists. Have you ever asked yourself, well, what's the chances of getting killed in a terrorist attack? You know, what's the chances of getting killed in a car wreck in the year 2004? Well, 40,000 people or 50,000 people are going to get killed in car wrecks. Are you so terrified of automobiles now that you're not going to get into another one, you're not going to drive anymore? Well, about 30,000 people a year die from flu. Fewer people die from the flu than die in car wrecks, and if you're not going to stop driving, then why in the world would you be concerned about not getting a flu shot? You have a less chance of dying from the flu than you do in an automobile. I mean, you know, just looking at it statistically, if you want to give yourself a better chance of living, stop driving. Let's try the second one. When asked why, Dr. Feudenberg said it was due to the mercury and the aluminum in every flu shot. Mercury and aluminum in every flu shot. What causes it? Is it the flu shot? No, it's the mercury and the aluminum in every flu shot. The gradual mercury and aluminum buildup in the brain causes cognitive dysfunction. John Hopkins' newsletter of November 1998 stated that Alzheimer's incidence would quadruple in the coming years. Could flu shots be one reason? Now, vaccinations, the moral dilemma. You know, most of us have had our children, grandchildren, and even our great-grandchildren vaccinated against many diseases. But how many of you know how those vaccinations were produced? You ever thought about what it is that goes into that vaccine? You know, most of you people are pretty concerned about what goes in your mouth, and you'd be real cautious and real careful about reading the label on the can. I mean, some of you people out there are real concerned about Charlie the Tuna and whether or not, you know, Daryl the Dolphin got caught in a tuna net and might have gotten into your tuna can. In fact, you don't have to have Daryl the Dolphin in your tuna can. You just have to know that Daryl the Dolphin got killed out here in an unapproved net to stop eating tuna fish. You know, people are kind of funny, aren't they? And you're real concerned about a fish or a dolphin. Well, some polio, measles, mumps, rubella, rabies, hepatitis, AB, chickenpox, smallpox, Ebola, HIV, sepsis, and flu vaccinations use fetal cell lines to create their product. So they use aborted human babies to produce the vaccines that you shoot up routinely every year. Stick them right into your kids. I don't think you people would go out and eat a baby fetus, would you? Well, why would you mainline it if you wouldn't eat it? I just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. So, can a parent in good conscience have his child inoculated with a vaccine produced using the cells of aborted fetuses killed by abortion? Now, in the case of rubella, the active rubella virus in the fetal cell line RA27-3 came from the 27th aborted fetus third tissue culture explant during the 1964 rubella epidemic. Havrix, the hepatitis A vaccine, uses a virus strain from the lung cells taken from a 14-week aborted fetus. Verifax, the chickenpox vaccine, uses cell lines derived from a 3-month aborted fetus and a 14-week aborted fetus. Merck has announced the use of new fetal line cell vaccines. PERC6 to be used to develop their HIV vaccine. PERC6 is derived from the retinal tissue of an 18-week gestation fetus. Scientists now want to create their own embryonic stem cell colonies and then feed them using aborted fetal tissue as the cultivating cell substrate. This information was taken from Celebrate Life, November-December 2002, Fine Young Cannibals, Babies Eating Babies. I just thought I'd share that with you. Let you know where you're getting your flu vaccine from. Now, here's a little story that comes across the wire concerning the Spanish flu vaccines. You know, Spanish flu is what they call that flu strain back in 1918. We had the Hong Kong flu, you know, and you get the Spanish flu, and I guess you could get the German measles. And we like to hang labels, you know, on these so that we can identify these various diseases and vaccines and historical events. Well, the Spanish flu is what they called that back in 1918. It was pretty severe. I can remember as a child people telling stories about the flu epidemic and the people that were dying, you know, like Uncle Otto and Aunt Bessie and so on down the line. Well, Ryle Dwyer writes in the horror of the 1918-20 pandemic, which the propaganda says was caused by Spanish flu, reported in the Irish Examiner on May 1st. Well, how did they know that it was a virus of Spanish flu that killed millions of civilians and soldiers? This disaster occurred when viruses were unknown to medical science. It took a British science team to identify the first virus in man in 1933. Well, that isn't so long ago. You know, we didn't even know about viruses until 1933. You know, about 70 years ago. As regards the origin of the outbreak, it relates that a senior U.S. Army officer suggested that the Germans might have been responsible for the bug as part of their war effort by spreading it in the theaters or where large numbers of people assembled. Did they also spread it among their own people, killing 400,000 Germans, as reported? Ryle would have us believe that all those American soldiers who died from non-combatant causes may have died from Spanish flu. But U.S. Army records show that 7 men dropped dead after being vaccinated. Let me repeat that. U.S. Army records show that 7 American servicemen dropped dead after being vaccinated for the flu. Now, a report from U.S. Secretary of War Henry L. Stimson not only verified these deaths, but also stated that there had been 63 deaths and 28,585 cases of hepatitis as a direct result of yellow fever vaccination during a 6-month period of World War I. Now, that was only one of the 25 shots given to recruits during World War I. Army records also reveal that after vaccination became compulsory in the U.S. Army back in 1911, not only did typhoid fever increase rapidly, but all other vaccinal diseases increased at an alarming rate. God, that's worth knowing. You see, in 1911, the Army looked around and they said, "My God, look at typhoid fever and look at yellow fever and look at these diseases that our soldiers are getting. We need a solution to this problem. We'll come up with vaccines. We'll vaccinate our soldiers." Makes sense, doesn't it? After all, that's the propaganda we've all been taught. We all know that if you get a disease, gosh, we need a solution to that, so we have to have a vaccine. We can't conceive of eating better, getting more vitamins and minerals and more sleep and rest. You know, you go out on a Friday or a Saturday night and you drink a lot of hooch, chase wild women, go down to Flo's and have a good time, eat ho-hos, ding-dongs, Twinkies, and wash them down with Cokes, and nobody ever puts a connecting link between nutrition and health. We don't want to stop the pleasure centers. We don't want to deprive our bodies of physical pleasures. So we get disease, and then we say, well, gosh, now that I got this disease, I got to have a solution. Along comes Marcus Welby, MD, and says, hey, I've got forgiveness of sin here, right here in this hypodermic needle. Army records reveal that after the vaccinations became compulsory in the U.S. Army in 1911, not only did the typhoid increase rapidly, but every single other disease vaccinated for increased. They didn't decrease, they increased. Did the vaccine cause the increase? Well, it sure as hell didn't lower it, did it? Well, that isn't what they taught me in third grade, for crying out loud. Did they teach you that vaccines cause greater incidence of disease? Has anybody ever figured out that maybe 30,000 people a year die from the flu from the vaccine? Did you ever think of that? Traffic auto accidents are caused by driving and riding in automobiles. You ever think about that? So when you get killed in an automobile accident, it's more than likely you were riding the automobile. If you get killed in a plane crash, it's more than likely you were riding an airplane. I know how to solve that. If I stay out of airplanes, I'll increase my chances of surviving an airplane crash. If I stay out of automobiles, I'll increase my chances of surviving an auto wreck. If I don't have a flu vaccine, I will increase my chances of surviving flu. I know it's a radical new concept, but stick with me. There's more to come. U.S. Army records show that 7 men dropped dead after being vaccinated. 7 men are vaccinated and they die. Well, the good news is they vaccinate 30,000 men. And only 7 of them dropped dead. Did it ever occur to anybody that if you didn't vaccinate the 30,000 men, none of the 30,000 would have dropped dead? I know it's a wild new concept to you, but now, after America entered the war in 1917, the death rate from typhoid vaccination rose to the highest point in the history of the U.S. Army. The deaths occurred after the shots were given in sanitary American hospitals by well-supervised Army personnel in well-supervised camps in France where sanitation had been practiced for years. So they weren't doing this out here, you know, in India or Mexico or some third world backwater country, you know, with poor sanitation, doing it right here in our Army camps. Now, the report of the Surgeon General of the U.S. Army shows that during 1917, there were admitted into Army hospitals 19,608 men. That's 19,608 suffering from anti-typhoid inoculation and vaccine. Now, this takes no account of those whose vaccine diseases were attributed to other causes. So it was more than 19,000, but we don't know how many more, because sometimes you'll have a sickness and you'll go to the hospital and they'll say, well, what you've got is thus and such, and what you really have is a vaccine reaction. We don't count those. Now, the Army doctors knew all of these cases of disease and death were due to vaccination, and they were honest enough to admit it in their medical reports. When Army doctors tried to suppress the symptoms of typhoid with a stronger vaccine, it caused a worse form of typhoid. But when they concocted an even stronger vaccine to suppress the stronger vaccine to suppress typhoid, they created an even worse disease called Spanish flu. Well, after the war, this was one of the vaccines used to protect a panic-stricken world from the soldiers returning from World War I battlefronts infected with dangerous diseases. Did you get that? Let me read this story to you again. The Army doctors knew that all of these cases of disease and death were due to the vaccinations and were honest enough to admit it, and they wrote it up in their medical reports. When the Army doctors tried to suppress the symptoms of the typhoid with a stronger vaccine, it caused a worse form of typhoid. So then they concocted an even stronger vaccine to suppress the stronger vaccine that caused even more typhoid. And they created an even worse disease called Spanish flu. The flu of the great flu epidemic of 1918. After the war, this was one of the vaccines used to protect the panic-stricken world from the soldiers returning from World War I battlefronts infected with these dangerous diseases, and the rest is history. Well, maybe it isn't such a bad thing that you missed your flu shot this year. You ever stop to think of that? Hey, hang on a second. I got to tell you another little story, and then we'll come back to this vaccine and flu story. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. That Communist Manifesto, by the way, is a foreign and alien ideology to our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. Traditional American values were based upon individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. Now, these foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant that we received from Moses out of Mount Sinai. We've been taught to covet our neighbor's property and then call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures called Federal Reserve notes, and then we practice idolatry by signing contracts. We call those 1040 forms. And 1099 forms with these foreign and alien gods that we call government. And you know, we're not getting away with these crimes either. We're now paying up to 75% of everything we create and produce in taxes. We live in mortgaged houses owned by the savings and loan companies. We drive cars, but they're owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. The average family of four has a $70,000 consumer debt. As a nation, we owe $8 trillion in national debt. And then on top of that, we're surety for another $44 trillion of unfunded government obligations. Our financial institutions, our banks, etc., are leveraged out to $60 trillion worldwide in derivatives. And then our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme. We live from paycheck to paycheck. And then we're taught to call all of this prosperity. Well, you know, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than all of this prosperity and debt. And our founding fathers followed that better way in our Constitution and Bill of Rights. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and ask for my free 4-hour compact disc package. Now, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Doesn't cost you anything. You can call right now. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send me an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about vaccines. Now, if you missed your flu vaccine this year, join the camp. I didn't get mine either. I didn't get mine last year or the year before. I'm 65 years old, never had a shot. And if I live another 65 years, I'm not going to have another one unless somebody knocks me down, drugs me, knocks me out, and sticks me while I'm kicking and screaming. I avoid vaccines like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD, and Flo's whorehouse. You know, when you're 19, you have eternal life, and it's hard to keep you out of Flo's place. But when you get to be about 50 or 60, if you're still alive, and you take a look at Flo's and you avoid it like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I remember when I was a kid, I used to fly airplanes, and I flew under the bridges and power lines. That's because when you're 19, you have eternal life. When I got to be 30, I flew over the bridges and power lines. When I got to be 50, I quit flying. Somebody told me that the family that flies together dies together. And I took it to heart. I figured that one out. I said, you know, if I never fly in another airplane, I probably will never die in an airplane crash. Mull that one over for a second. If you never get a flu shot, you'll probably never die of the flu. But if you get a flu shot, 30,000 people a year die from the flu. I've never heard anybody tell me that flu shots cause flu. Now, the 30,000 people that die from the flu every year, almost always they've had a flu shot. Have you heard that story? Well, one of two things, you know. If you've had a flu shot and die from the flu shot didn't save you. And it might have been the vehicle that killed you. Listen to this. Why you should avoid taking vaccines. Well, Dr. James R. Shannon, he's the former director of the National Institutes of Health, declared the only safe vaccine is one that's never used. Cowpox vaccine was believed able to immunize people against smallpox. At the time this vaccine was introduced, there was already a decline in the number of cases of smallpox. Japan introduced compulsory vaccination in 1872. In 1892, there were 165,000 cases of smallpox with 30,000 deaths despite the vaccination program. More people died in 1892 from smallpox after being vaccinated than were dying in 1872 when it was introduced. Much of the success that has been attributed to vaccination programs actually has been due to improvement in public health related to water quality and sanitation, less crowded living conditions, better nutrition, and higher standards of living. Typically, the incidence of a disease was clearly declining before the vaccine for that disease was introduced. In England, the incidence of polio had decreased by 82% before the polio vaccine was introduced in 1956. In the early 1900s, an astute Indiana physician, Dr. W.B. Clark, said, cancer was practically unknown until compulsory vaccination with cowpox vaccine began to be introduced. And I've had to deal with 200 cases of cancer, and I never saw a case of cancer in an unvaccinated person. That was Dr. W.B. Clark, back in the early 1900s. When the incidence of cancer was 1 in 33. He treated 200 incidents of cancer, and he said, I haven't seen a case of cancer yet in somebody that was unvaccinated. Today, nearly everybody is vaccinated, and the incidence of cancer is 1 out of 2. Did you hear that? If you and I were sitting in this room across from each other, statistically, one of us is going to get cancer in our lifetime. 100 years ago, it was 1 in 33. Clark observed clear back at the turn of the century. No. Not 2000. He figured this out in 1900, for crying out loud. He said, hey, I'm looking at people that have cancer. And I haven't seen one yet that came from a person who was not vaccinated. Well, that should give you a clue, shouldn't it? There's a widely held belief that vaccines should not be criticized because the public might refuse to take them. This is valid only if the benefits exceed the known risks of the vaccines. Do vaccines actually prevent disease? I think that if you're a normal, everyday, garden variety, air-breathing American today, you'd say, well, absolutely. Of course, vaccines prevent disease. Well, now, what evidence do you have of that? I know you know that, and you learned that in the third grade from Mrs. Wiles, but did you ever do any medical research? Did you ever go down to the library and pull out the medical journals, the statistical analysis, and look at it for yourself. Have you ever done that? I never did. I just believed what Mrs. Wells told me because I was in the third grade and she said it must be true. Now, my old granny, you know, was an old timer, and she didn't think too much of those vaccines. I was raised by my granny, and because of that, she kept me away from vaccines. I had five children. I kept all of them from vaccines, and then they decided that old dad over here didn't know what he's talking about, so they went out and got their shots. Hadn't killed them yet. Of course, they're not very old yet. They're all in their 20s and 30s yet. We'll see when they get to be 50, 60 years old whether or not those vaccines saved them. These vaccines don't seem to be saving you from cancer, muscular dystrophy, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, and a whole host and variety of these new diseases. Alzheimer's. Who in the hell ever heard of Alzheimer's disease 100 years ago? You ever think about that? Alzheimer's disease 100 years ago. We didn't hear about that. Today you got Alzheimer's disease. About 3 million Americans that have Alzheimer's disease, and they say there's 5 or 6 million more that have it and don't know it. President Reagan died from Alzheimer's disease. Where'd he get that? So in the early 1900s, an astute Indiana physician, Dr. W.B. Clark, said he hadn't seen any cancer in an unvaccinated person. He'd done 200 cases. Now, at that time, that was a lot of cases. One in 33. Let's take 200 times 33. 33 times 200. That's 6,600 people in today's terminology. How many doctors today treat 6,600 cancer patients and then arrive at a conclusion? Well, Dr. Clark said that he looked at 200 cancer cases at the turn of the century, which would be the equivalent of 6,600 today. And he said, I haven't seen a case of cancer in an unvaccinated person. Today, everybody's been vaccinated. My God, the public school won't even let you in the door unless you've been vaccinated, for crying out loud. And now the incidence of cancer is one out of every two people, and they promise, that by 2020, that's only 16 years away, in the next 16 years, they promise us, everybody in America will get cancer one time in his lifetime, one out of one, by the year 2020. Kind of reminds me of the story I've given you here a couple of times. The incidence of diabetes has doubled over the past 20 years. Diabetes doubled over the last 20 years. It just happens that the consumption of soft drinks in the United States doubled over the past 20 years. Somebody's going to write me an email now and say, you crazy lunatic. Are you suggesting that soda pop causes diabetes? Well, I'll bet you that if we could double the consumption of soda pop over the next 20 years, I'll bet you we can double the incidence of diabetes over the next 20 years. So get out there and buy another six-pack of Coke, would you? Help me test this. Let's double our consumption. Especially all you people that don't have diabetes yet. Let's get out there and drink more Coke, more Pepsi. You know, that soft drink, I don't know if I've told you this before, I think I have. That soda pop contains 1 teaspoon of sugar for every ounce of soda pop in the can. Some of them a little less, some of them a little more, but as you look at soda pop and the amount of sugar that's in it, it's about 1 to 1. Your body can only digest 3 teaspoons of sugar a day. 3 teaspoons of refined sugar. I guess I should tell you refined sugar. Your body can handle all of the raw natural sugar that you can stick in it. You can't OD on honey. You'll puke first. But you can sure OD on refined sugar. And your body comes down with some disease like diabetes And Marcus Welby says, well, don't stop drinking soda pop for crying out loud and make the price of our stocks go down. Take insulin. Let Marcus Welby, MD, and Mercy Medical Center sell you forgiveness of sin. Don't restrain yourselves for crying out loud. That would have an adverse effect on the economy, especially the medical economy. Now, there's a widely held belief that vaccines should not be criticized because the public might refuse to take them. Did you hear that? Can you believe some of this crap? You shouldn't be discouraged from being vaccinated just because it causes disease. You shouldn't be discouraged from drinking soda pop just because it causes diabetes. Should you? And furthermore, you shouldn't even be told this because you might start thinking. We don't want you thinking, for crying out loud. We just want you to perform an act. And my God, can you imagine what would happen if people had this information and they started thinking for themselves? Could you imagine what would happen to Merck stock and Pfizer? Well, the important question does not appear to have been adequately studied. Vaccines are enormously profitable for drug companies, and recent legislation in the United States has exempted lawsuits against pharmaceutical companies in the event of adverse reactions to vaccines, which are very common. So if you have an adverse reaction to a vaccine that you get from a pharmaceutical company and it kills you or it injures you, you cannot sue the pharmaceutical company. Congress says no. Isn't that just special? Now, if Ford or General Motors makes an automobile that harms you, kills you, or injures you, you can sue the car company. How come you can't sue Merck or Pfizer for creating a vaccine that injures you? Well, the answer is it's bad for business. That's why. Now, in 1975, Germany stopped requiring pertussis, that's whooping cough vaccination. And today, less than 10% of German children are vaccinated against pertussis. The number of cases of pertussis has steadily declined in Germany since they discontinued the pertussis vaccine and vaccination. Now, isn't that just real special? Even though far fewer children are receiving the pertussis vaccine, there are more children, less vaccine, and less whooping cough. They were having a problem over in Japan with babies being vaccinated. You know, they want to vaccinate them, you know, as soon as they can. See, when your baby is first born, he has zero immunity. Zero. His immune system begins to start functioning after birth. So, by the time they're 2 months old, their immune system's starting to work, and so the vaccine doesn't kill them. If you vaccinate babies between 2 months and 2 years, you have a lot of disease. So the Japanese said, we won't vaccinate our children until after they're 2 years old. And the incidence of autism in Japan went down to near, not quite, but near zero after delaying the vaccinations from 2 months to 2 years. I'm just reporting that that's what they reported, and they're probably a bunch of damn liars. You know, you can't trust them chinks now, can you? But if that story's true, and if babies' immune systems, when they're very young, don't work very well, and if you didn't vaccinate this kid until he's 2 years old, and assuming that he could survive until he's 2 years old, he'd have a whole lot less chance of developing autism after two than before two. Thought I'd share that with you. Measles outbreaks have occurred in schools with vaccination rates of over 98% in every part of the United States, including areas that had been reported no cases of measles for many years. As measles immunization rates rise to high levels, measles becomes a disease seen only in vaccinated persons. Ah, wait a minute. I thought, maybe I made a mistake here, but I thought when you got vaccinated, the purpose was to prevent you from getting a disease. So if I got a shot, I got vaccinated, and I got the disease, would that be an indication that the vaccine did not prevent the disease? Mull that one over a little bit. I know, boys and girls, it may take a little time here, but let's think about it. So if you've got a vaccination rate of 98% and people who have been vaccinated get measles, wouldn't that tell you that the measles vaccine doesn't prevent measles? Well, at least it doesn't prevent measles in everybody, does it? Could there be an adverse reaction from measles, such as maybe cancer, muscular dystrophy, arterial sclerosis, or something else? Could it? Has anybody ever thought about it? Have you ever entertained that idea? So measles outbreaks have occurred in schools with vaccination rates over 98%. I had a kid one time, firstborn kid. I was sending him to a private school. And they sent a note home one day, and they said, "We want to vaccinate your kid next Wednesday." Can you believe that? Wanted to shoot my kid up with snake venom and monkey pus. So I said, "Well, let me step into this fray." So I wrote on the back of the note, "Please do not inoculate my child. If this is going to present a problem, please call, and I will keep Ted home next Wednesday so that there will not be an accidental vaccination of my kid. Because if there is, you may rest assured that litigation will surely follow." I've been accused of being a litigious person. And they're right. I am. Well, the school nurse called me on the telephone. She rang me up on the telly. And she introduced herself, and she said she was the school nurse and that she wanted to inform me of facts that perhaps I wasn't aware of. And I said, "My God, would you please educate me? This ignorance and stupidity is more than I can bear." And she did. And she preached me a sermon for about 5 minutes and told me about how without vaccines, we would all die. The vaccines have saved humanity. Thank God for vaccines. And when she got all through, I said, "Well, thank you very much. And I really appreciate you calling me, taking the time out of your busy schedule to inform me of these facts that I might not be aware of." So I said to her, "Excuse me, ma'am, is there anybody else in the school that is not going to be vaccinated next Wednesday?" And she said, "No, you're the only one." I said, "Now let me see if I understand this. You're going to vaccinate all the little boys and girls over at the school, and you're concerned about my boy Ted not getting his vaccination. What seems to be the problem? What is it that's troubling you?" And she said, "Well, if little Teddy isn't vaccinated, he might get one of these horrible childhood diseases like measles and mumps and so on. Now, we used to call these childhood diseases, and when I was a kid, you know, little shaver running around, I got measles, I got mumps. I guess my granny didn't love me because she didn't have me shot up with snake venom and monkey pus. You just got your disease and you just toughed it out. And you developed lifelong immunity. Now, you see, I got measles when I was a little kid, but I've never had measles since. I got whooping cough and mumps and measles and all these childhood diseases. I don't know how many there are, and I don't know how many I got, but I guess I got them all. And I've never been troubled from that day on." We used to call that natural immunity. You know, you got the disease, and you got over it, and your body was stronger for it, and it was a natural process. Today, we don't want natural immunity. We want artificial immunity. And then you have to get these booster shots. I mean, you got your measles vaccine, and you have to get this booster shot every 10 years. Now, that's immensely profitable for Merck and Pfizer. And God bless Merck And God bless Pfizer and all you stockholders out there. What I wanted to know was, what in the hell's that got to do with my boy Ted? I want you to make a lot of money, and I want you to make lots of profit. I want you to live happily ever after. Why do you have to shoot up my kid? So after she told me that all the other little boys and girls are going to get their vaccines, they're going to get shot up with their snake venom and monkey pus, and little Teddy will be the only one, I said, well, that solves the problem. Let me see if I understand this. When all these other little kiddies get shot up with this vaccine over here, they can't get the disease. Is that correct? That's correct. All right. Well, then my little boy Ted can't give them that disease because they're protected from it, aren't they? And she said, yeah. I said, okay, well, it solves that problem. Now, if all these other little kids over there have this vaccine and they're shot up, they're immunized, they can't give the disease to anybody else, can they? She said, that's right. That's right. I said, well, and then if my kid is the only kid that doesn't have the vaccine, he can't give the other kids the disease and they can't give it to him. So why does he need it? There was a long, pregnant pause. I don't think this woman's brain ever worked before, but it was beginning to work now. And she excused herself because of her busy schedule, and she closed the conversation, and we terminated it right there. And Wednesday came, and Wednesday went, and my little boy Ted didn't get his shots. And sure enough, do you know what happened to my boy Ted? He got measles. Well, after all, he didn't get his vaccine. And yes, sirree, Bob, he got measles. And he was home for 2 or 3 days with the measles, and he got over the measles, and now he has natural immunity, and he's never got measles again. Now, the other little boys and girls got their measles shots. And they, too, over the years, either got measles in spite of the vaccine, or they had to continually get more measles vaccinations, which in turn made more and more profits for Merck and Pfizer. God bless the profit system. Now, what we don't know is how many of those little boys and girls developed cancer, muscular dystrophy, Alzheimer's disease, or some other disease caused by the aluminum and the mercury in the vaccines. Huh? Has anybody ever thought of that? Now, you might think about vaccines without mercury and without aluminum, and maybe the vaccine wouldn't prevent you from getting a disease, but maybe it wouldn't kill you from some other more degenerative disease that's even worse than the disease that we're trying to prevent. You know how many people died from measles? It's true, a few did. And so they appeal to your fear so that they can sell you a product. Yeah, I'm about out of time. We've got to cut it off right here. We'll be back tomorrow night, same time, same station, and we'll pick it up right there, talking about vaccines. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement only. All right, The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. There's the signal, says my time's up, I gotta go. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. Until then, good night, friends.